in the limelight.
A memo leaked by WikiLeaks from Hillary Clinton makes the case to arm terrorists in Syria and was largely overlooked due to inaccurate dates, says Daniel Lazur, the author of The Frozen Republic, How the U.S. Constitution is Paralyzing Democracy, in his investigative article for Consortium News titled Leaked Hillary Clinton Memo Killed 500,000 People. Stay with us, please, for the details. A Hillary Clinton memo that WikiLeaks made public in 2016 has not gotten the attention it deserves. It takes us back to 2012 and the early phase of the Syrian war. At that point, it was largely an internal affair, although Saudi arms shipments were playing a greater and greater role in bolstering rebel forces. But once the Obama administration decided in favor of intervention, the conflict was quickly internationalized as thousands of terrorists, styling themselves holy warriors, flooded in from as far away as Western China. The 1,200-word memo by the then Secretary of State, Clinton, begins with the subject of Iran, an important patron of Syria. She dismisses any notion that nuclear talks will stop Iran from improving the capability to enrich uranium. In such a case, she says, Israel will suffer a strategic setback since it will no longer be able to respond to provocations with conventional military strikes on Syria and Lebanon as it can today. Denied the ability to bomb at will, Israel might have leave off secondary targets and strike at the main enemy instead. Consequently, Clinton argues that the U.S. should topple the government of President Bashar al-Assad of Syria so as to weaken Iran and allay the fears of Israel, which has long regarded the Islamic Republic as its primary enemy. As the memo puts it, bringing down Assad would not only be a massive boon to Israel's security, it will also ease Israel's understandable fear of losing its nuclear monopoly. Then, Israel and the United States might be able to develop a common view of when the Iranian program is so dangerous that military action could be warranted, unquote. This document, making the case to arm Syrian rebels, may have been largely overlooked because of the dates, which appear to be inaccurate. One line gives the time as 2001, even though Clinton was still a New York senator-elect at that point. That date is also out of sync with the timeline of nuclear diplomacy with Iran. Another contains a State Department case and document number and a date of November 30, 2015. But that's incorrect as well, since it postdates Clinton's resignation as Secretary of State by better than 2.5 years. Consequently, anyone stumbling across the memo in the WikiLeaks archives would have no idea of how its rather loopy logic figures in the great debate about whether to use force to bring down Syrian President Assad. But textual clues provide an answer. The second paragraph refers to nuclear talks with Iran that began in Istanbul this April and will continue in Baghdad in May, unquote. Events that took place in 2012. The sixth invokes an interview with CNN's Christian Amanpour, conducted with the then Israeli War Minister Ehud Barak last week. Since the interview took place on April 19, 2012, the memo can, therefore, be dated to the fourth week in April. This is shortly before Clinton joined forces with then-CIA director David Petraeus to push for an aggressive program of rebel military aid. Needless to say, Clinton's skepticism about negotiating with Iran proved to be unwarranted, since Iran eventually agreed to downgrade its nuclear program. The memo thus illustrates her hawkishness along with her conviction that Israeli security trumps all other considerations, even if it means setting fire to a region that's been burned over more than once. But the memo illustrates much else besides. Clinton's recklessness, her lack of realism, and her almost mystical belief that everything will fall neatly into place once the United States flexes its muscle. Overthrowing Assad would be nothing less than transformative. She claims in the memo, Iran would be strategically isolated, unable to exert its influence in the Middle East. The resulting regime in Syria will see the United States as a friend, not an enemy. Washington would gain substantial recognition as fighting for the people in the Arab world, not the corrupt regimes. For Israel, the rationale for a bolt from the blue attack on Iran's nuclear facilities would be eased, and a new Syrian regime might well be open to early action on the frozen peace talks with Israel. Hezbollah in Lebanon would be cut off from its Iranian sponsor, since Syria would no longer be a transit point for Iranian training, assistance, and missiles. Unquote. Hillary Clinton further claims it was a low-cost, high-payoff approach that would eliminate one enemy, weaken two more, and generate such joy among ordinary Syrians that peace talks between Damascus and Tel Aviv will spring back to life, unquote. The risks were nil. Since the Libyan operation had no long-lasting consequences for the region, the memo says, referring to the overthrow of a strong man, Muammar Gaddafi, 6 months earlier, the Syrian operation wouldn't either. She claims, some argue that U.S. involvement risks a wider war with Russia. But the Kosovo example, in which NATO bombed Russian ally Serbia, shows otherwise. In that case, Russia had genuine ethnic and political ties to the Serbs, which don't exist between Russia and Syria, and even then, Russia did little more than complain. Russian officials have already acknowledged they won't stand in the way if intervention comes, unquote. So there was nothing to worry about. 65 years of Arab-Israeli conflict would fall by the wayside while Russia remains safely marginalized. Needless to say, that's not how things turn out. At that moment, Libya seemed under control. But 3 or 4 months later, it would explode as Western-backed militias blasted away at one another, imposing weird barbaric rules in the name of Sharia, reinstituting slavery and rolling back decades of social progress. Once President Barack Obama approved a modified version of Clinton-Petraeus' plan, Syria would plunge into the same abyss, as Salafis, funded by Saudi Arabia and other oil monarchies, spread sectarian violence and fear. Clinton's assumption that the U.S. could neatly and cleanly decapitate the Syrian government without having to worry about broader consequences was little short of deluded. The notion that ordinary Syrians would fall to their knees in gratitude was ludicrous, while her disregard for the intricates of Syrian politics was astonishing. Then there is the memo's blithe suggestion that Washington work with regional allies like Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar to organize, train, and arm Syrian rebel forces. In late 2009, Clinton wrote in another diplomatic memo made public by WikiLeaks that Donors in Saudi Arabia constitute the most significant source of funding to Sunni terrorist groups worldwide, unquote. So that made her think 2 years later that Riyadh would not fund Syrian Takfiris of precisely the same ilk? The 2009 memo slammed Qatar for allowing Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and other terrorist groups to use the Sheikhdom as a fundraising locale. So what made Hillary Clinton think that a pro-Al-Qaeda autocracy would now help Syrians fight for their freedom, as the memo puts it? Wouldn't Qatar be more likely to remove what little freedom Syrians had left? Of course it would. There is remarkable continuity between the Syria policy that Clinton was proposing and earlier policies in Afghanistan and Libya. In the first, U.S. military aid wound up flowing to the notorious warlord Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, a sectarian and raging anti-Western xenophobe who, nonetheless, was the most efficient at killing Soviets. As Steve Cole put it in Ghost Wars, his best-selling 2004 account of the CIA's love affair with the Afghan Mujahideen. Hekmatyar's cutters wound up with a lion's share of American arms. More or less the same thing happened in Libya once Clinton persuaded Qatar to join the anti-Gaddafi coalition. The Sheikh then seized the opportunity to distribute some $400 million to various rebel militias, many of them Takfiri terrorists. The Obama administration said nothing in response. Once again, U.S. arms and material flow to the most reactionary elements. The same would happen in Syria, where U.S. and Saudi arms went to the local Al-Qaeda affiliate known as Jabhat al-Nusra and even to Daesh, as a meticulous report by Conflict Armament Research, a Swiss and EU-funded study group in London, has shown. By August 2012, a secret Defense Intelligence Agency report found that Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda were already the major forces driving the insurgency and that the U.S. and Persian Gulf states backed them regardless. Speechwriter Ben Rhodes summed up the problem of moderate rebels who were indistinguishable from Al-Qaeda in his White House memoir, "The World as It Is." In that, he writes that al-Nusra was probably the strongest fighting force within the opposition, and while there were extremist elements in the group, it was also clear that the more moderate opposition was fighting side by side with al-Nusra. I argued that labeling al-Nusra as terrorists would alienate the same people we want to help while giving al-Nusra less incentive to avoid extremist affiliations, unquote. The cost half a dozen years after the Clinton email is staggering. As many as 560,000 people have died, half the population has been displaced, while the World Bank has estimated total war damage at $226 billion, roughly 6 years' income for every Syrian man, woman, and child. A Kaged memo thus unleashed a real-life catastrophe that refuses to go away. It's a nightmare from which President Donald Trump is struggling to escape in his confused and deluded way, and that the deep state, everyone from ARC, Neocon, John Bolton, to liberal Nancy Pelosi, is determined to renew.